Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and New Jersey Public Radio, and ABC senior White House correspondent Jake Tapper is here now to preview the president's first post-election news conference and to talk about his new book, which reveals one of the real scandals in Afghanistan, not David Petraeus's or General Allen's sex lives, but the reckless leadership and bad decision-making that led to one of the deadliest days for American troops there, the attack on combat outpost Keating on October 3rd, 2009. The book is called The Outpost, An Untold Story of American Valor. Hi, Jake. Welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And we'll get to the president throwing down the gauntlet again with a big number for new taxes on the rich. But let's first talk about your book. Of all the places where Americans have fought in Iraq and Afghanistan this decade, why did you choose Combat Outpost Keating to write a book about?
It was a bit of serendipity. My son had just been born, so I was in the recovery room of the hospital in Washington, D.C. And out of the corner of my eye, this is October 3rd, 2009, I'm holding my day-old son. I look up and I see this story about this attack, this overwhelming attack by about 400 Taliban on 53 U.S. troops in this incredibly isolated outpost at the bottom of three steep mountains, 14 miles from the Pakistan border. And I'm holding my son, hearing about these eight other sons taken from the earth, eight U.S. troops who fought valiantly. And I had to find out more, and it just became one of these reporting projects.
And what happened on October 3rd, 2009?
The camp had been placed in this incredibly vulnerable location. Right before dawn, an overwhelming force of Taliban attacked, and it was a brilliant attack. Taliban fighters are smart, and they're warriors. In fact, a lot of troops that I'd spoken with who had fought in both Iraq and Afghanistan had much more admiration for Taliban fighters than Iraq. And in Iraq, they thought they were just cheap criminals taking pot shots and, you know, planting IEDs. But in Afghanistan, they would really take the fight to you, and they would fight to the death. And that's what happened. You have 400 or so, and it was a smart, well-coordinated attack. They pinned off the observation post so they couldn't do anything to help the camp. They pinned off the mortars so the big guns that could reach into the mountains couldn't do anything, and they knew where every door was and every generator, and they just, with overwhelming force, created this onslaught and eventually even got into the camp themselves.
And something made you suspect that this might not just be another battle in which people had to die facing a tough enemy, but that there was something wrong about how this one came about?
Well, just the idea that it was in this horrible fishbowl. I mean, the idea that anybody would think it was a good idea to put this camp there. And then I just started making calls and hearing about the heroics of these troops from the soldiers who survived. 45 soldiers survived it. And then there was just just serious questions about why the camp was there, why it was not fortified enough, who thought of this idea to put the camp there. And it became this quest I went on, this journalistic quest to figure out, solve the mystery of why the camp was there, and then also just explain in a larger sense what these troops do, how life works on a day-to-day basis, but also looking at the Afghanistan war. Look, I'd been covering it the way that a lot of people cover it. I was at the North Lawn of the White House covering the fights between the Pentagon and the White House, covering 40,000 troops, 10,000 troops. What should the troop levels be? This made it real for me. I wanted to know what these men and women actually do, what their purpose is in this corner of the world, how they're affecting change, and why so many decisions that get made end up getting them killed.
Who made those bad decisions? How far up the chain did it go? Was it Allen, Petraeus, Rumsfeld? How far up do you take this?
Well, it goes – some of the decisions are presidential and Secretary of Defense level. Specifically, there are accounts where – because there are not enough supplies in Afghanistan, because there are not enough helicopters, most specifically, decisions are made that end up putting people in peril. Specifically, that camp was put at the bottom of the mountains because it needed to be next to the road, and it needed to be next to the road because there weren't enough helicopters in the country. So it goes all the way up to Rumsfeld and Bush for that specific decision. Ultimately, the road is not strong enough for to maintain the kind of resupply convoys that they need. So within a year of putting the camp there next to the road so it would be next to the road, they really stopped using the road for resupply. But instead of moving the camp, they keep the camp there.
You said you wanted to get to know some of the individuals so you don't just report on them as numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about one of these guys, maybe Chris Cunningham or Jared Monty, or pick one of these guys.
Chris Cunningham and Jared Monty led this one expedition to Hill 2610. It was a reconnaissance mission. They were there to do overwatch, to watch this town of Gowardesh, which is a border town, kind of like a Wild West town at the border with Pakistan, before the U.S. pushed in. Chris Cunningham, Cricket, as he was called, is a sniper. He leads what's called a kill team. And Jared Monty was a scout. He led a team of forward observers and scouts. And they were there at Hill 2610. And here's, again, where a decision made in Washington, D.C. ends up having an effect on these guys' lives.
And you have Jared Monty's father,
Paul
in
Monty,
the book, back home in Massachusetts, saying that he can't believe that Rumsfeld and Bush, in one of the earlier incidents when they were still in office, would send these guys into battle in Afghanistan and not give them the supplies they need.
And this is what happens, is that they're about to push in. The 10th Mountain Division, the 371 Cav, is about to push in into Gowardesh. Monty and Cunningham and their team are watching over Gowardesh. But there's an incident with an IED. A guy named Sergeant Flores is wounded because of how undermanned they are. That wound, that injury, and it was a serious one for Flores, although he's fine now, that wound means that they delay the mission a day. Because they delayed the mission a day, Monty and Cunningham had to order in food and water. Because they ordered food and water in, the enemy was tipped off as to their presence. And then they got ambushed, and ultimately it ended with four Americans being killed, including Jared Monty, who ultimately won, posthumously, the Medal of Honor.
So David Petraeus will ultimately be remembered a little now for being part of what some people are calling a love pentagon, because there are five people involved, so it's not a love triangle, it's a love pentagon.
That's handy.
But much more, of course, for his counterinsurgency strategy, as you put it in the book, trying to divide the general population from the insurgents through cooperation with the local leaders. Would you say that it worked better in Iraq than in Afghanistan?
It seemed like it would. And especially in this corner of Afghanistan, this is Nuristan province. Nuristan province is legendarily untamed. It's where Rudyard Kipling put the man who would be king. It's where these were the last people in Afghanistan to convert to Islam. They were the first ones to take up arms against the Soviets. They don't want people there. They don't want the Afghan government there. They don't want the Americans there. And so counterinsurgency worked for a while. And I write at length about the successes that one company, one squadron, the 191 Cav had, winning over the local population, getting the local population to take control and kick out terrorists and insurgents in their midst. But ultimately, it fails. And it fails in this region in a very tragic way when one of the commanders of Combat Outpost Keating is assassinated. And from then on, everything just goes to hell. Petraeus had this theory of counterinsurgency, which works in some places and doesn't work in others, and it's a trendy theory. At the time, it was very trendy. I think there are a lot of doubters within the Pentagon about counterinsurgency now.
Jake Tapper, ABC News senior White House correspondent. His new book is The Outpost, An Untold Story of American Valor. We'll continue with Jake Tapper in a minute, and we'll get his preview of the president's news conference, and we'll ask if he was down there with the president today in Washington, what question would he ask? Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with ABC News senior White House correspondent Jake Tapper. I guess you're doing a book tour day-to-day, so you're not going to be at the White House for the president's first post-election news conference. If you were there, what would you want to ask him?
First of all, I should disclose that it's driving me crazy that I'm not down there. I've wanted him to give a press conference in quite some time, but I did schedule this these media appearances to promote the book.
So since you're such an active tweeter,
yeah,
you're going to tweet out all these questions you would like to see asked and hope one of your colleagues picks one of them.
Well, my colleagues are able, and I'm sure they'll come up with better questions than I could come up with. But, I mean, I think there are three topics. Obviously, you have to have – you come prepared to a press conference with more than one question because you don't know when you're going to get called on. The three topics that I'm most interested in are obviously Petraeus and General Allen and what he learned, when he learned it, what his concerns are, what the issue is. There's a lot of salacious details, but what he thinks is the most important issue at play. Two, there's a lot we still don't know about Benghazi, and I'd still want to know both about before the attack, all the denials of extra security that the State Department would not give to the people on the ground there. What happened during the attack? What you know? What the president was aware of when he was aware of it? What he ordered, and then after the attack, why it took so long for the administration to come to terms with the reason behind the attack? And then, lastly, obviously the fiscal cliff. The president put out $1.5 trillion in revenue that they want in a deal. That's almost twice as much as he wanted when he and John Boehner were coming to get terms with trying to come up with a grand bargain a couple years ago. Or a year ago, I guess. And so I'd want to know where he thinks there's room for compromise and how far he's willing to go.
On the scandal, do you think we're seeing evidence now of national security breaches with some of the things that it's being revealed that Paula Broadwell said in speeches, like about how the Benghazi attack may have been in pursuit of getting prisoners back, I think it was, which she has said publicly, but no U.S. official has said?
Right, although Fox News Channel's Jennifer Griffin, who apparently has good sources on the ground in Libya, she's reported it as well or confirmed Paula Broadwell's story. I think that there are huge national security implications, and our own Justice Department correspondent Pierre Thomas on ABC this morning reported that there are reams of documents that were secure and secret that Paula Broadwell apparently had, according to law enforcement officials. And I think there are two here. There are two issues. One is, and they're almost contradictory. One is, what exactly are the national security implications? What was David Petraeus telling Paula Broadwell in the midst of whatever relationship they had? And then two, there is this surveillance society question of, like, I'm still not exactly clear why there was an FBI investigation about any of this.
I'm really glad you brought that up because I was going to bring it up, this privacy angle, which is bubbling up here. If Petraeus wasn't under any kind of investigation himself, right, the investigation was of Paula Broadwell and what she was saying to this other woman, what's the FBI doing in his personal Gmail account? Do you see any legal or policy issues there?
I mean, I think that there is just a tremendous amount of civil liberties and privacy that we have signed away since 9/11. And it's not just Republicans. Yes, the Republicans are the ones who were running the White House at the time, but the Democrats have signed off on it and doubled down in some instances. President Obama has not rescinded these laws since taking office. And as I understand it, this started – and maybe I'm wrong because the official narrative keeps changing. But as I understand it, General – Allen gets this weird email from somebody who apparently turns out to be Paula Broadwell about this other woman, her name's Jill Kelly, and he tells Kelly, and Kelly tells an FBI agent who's a friend of hers who has sent her shirtless photographs of himself, and somehow an FBI investigation starts. I've never heard of an FBI investigation starting because of catty, weird emails sent. And it doesn't sound like there was anything like, threatening, I'm going to kill you, anything like in terms of like I have the nuclear launch missile codes. It was just kind of weird, salacious stuff.
But Kelly's claim was that she was being threatened in some way by Broadwell, right?
Yeah, but how? Her reputation,
not in a way that gets the FBI involved.
Well,
generally,
that's what's so strange. I mean, I don't know. I've never had contact with an FBI agent in terms of. I mean, it seems like a very low bar got the FBI involved, and then once the FBI was involved, it seems like okay. And this is what privacy advocates and internet security advocates have been talking about and warning about for years, which is. The problem is that once you give these powers that deal with national security, ultimately it's just going to lead to a bunch of people's bedrooms and it's not really relevant.
Why do you think that leaders resign over sex scandals but not the things like you write about in The Outpost?
It's a great question. I don't know. Maybe because it's easier for people. First of all, I mean, I don't think David Petraeus resigned because of a sex scandal. I think he resigned because he had a blackmailable thing going on and had shown very poor judgment. I don't know that if he – well, and then obviously the military has its own code of justice that says adultery is not permissible. But it's not as though if he had been defense secretary or CIA – it's because of his blackmail. The vulnerability.
I understand. There's a very concrete reason.
I don't know. I mean the point – it's because it's easy for people to understand. It's a scandal. I mean, look, here's one of the moms whose son was killed on October 3rd, 2009 at Combat Outpost Keating that I talked about in my book. She posted on Facebook the other day something along the lines of that she was glad the book was being written because at the time the media was much more obsessed with David Letterman's sex life and the balloon boy than they were about eight Americans being killed in Afghanistan and questions about why anybody would put an outpost at the bottom of three steep mountains or keep it there. Maybe just because it's more fun to talk about a sex scandal than to talk about a military tragedy.
ABC News senior White House correspondent Jake Tapper, author now of The Outpost, an untold story of American valor. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you, Brian. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come.